Welcome back to Transactional Love. Today, Wendy and I are welcoming Andrea Escobar, a passionate designer and the founder of Andrea Escobar Studio, where she explores the evolving concept of home through design and architecture and how it changes over time from person to person. Raised in Tijuana, Mexico, and educated in architecture at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, Andrea has over 10 years of professional experience in high-end residential projects in the San Francisco Bay. Her studio reflects her commitment to quality, originality, blending contemporary elegance with practical operational design. Andrea's current work includes consulting services with architects, private design services, and she's on the path to becoming a licensed architect in California. We're so excited to bring this conversation to you.
Hello.
Hi, Wendy.
Hi, Norma. I am so excited about today's guest. We're with our dear friend, Andrea Escobar. And I picked up a bottle of wine because I want to start right off the top with our liquid courage. So I picked up a bottle called Force and Grace. It's a Chardonnay. I picked it up for a couple reasons. One, I know the company I'm with loves a good label. It's beautiful. I'll let you describe it in a minute. And then I flipped the bottle around and read the back. And I was just like, oh yeah, this is perfect. It says, as a wrestler, dancer, and ultimately a vintner, I learned the artistry and the balance between force and grace. And as we dive into our conversation with Andrea, I think this dovetails nicely into what architecture is all about. Just that balance between structure and beauty. So anyways, I'm excited to try this.
It's a beautiful nod to design.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. So it's a 22 Carneros Chardonnay. And then I'll hand the bottle over to you and you can pour and also describe the label because that's like your favorite.
I love it. Okay, let's cheers. Welcome, Andrea, to the podcast.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Yay. Oh, this is lovely. Mm-hmm. This is so nice.
Describe the label.
So first I'll start with, I'm not a fan of Chardonnays typically, but Wendy, you proved me wrong.
I always do this, don't I?
So I don't think I would have ever picked out this bottle mm-hmm. on the shelf, but it is this beautiful label. It looks like this tapestry that's almost in dance. And it's hard to describe. You have to see it and we'll put it on Instagram, but it's not just like tapestry floating in the wind. It's actually dancing.
Yeah. What do you think? And Andrea? It looks like it's almost draped over a figure.
Yes.
I don't know. It was just really captivating.
For me, force it made me think grace. Of something really sculptural.
Mm-hmm. Like yes.
Clay. Sculptural clay.
I love the name, Horse mm-hmm. and Grace.
Me too. Me
okay. too. Strength okay. and elegance.
So as I said, when we opened up, our guest today is Andrea Escobar of Andrea Escobar Designs. She and I met 4 years ago now at a women in business meeting here in beautiful Benicia, California. And we both had the same sort of feeling about each other that we were each just like way too cool for each other. And we were required to do one-on-ones with people. And I was too nervous to do a one-on-one with her. Yeah, I was describing you and Chris, your husband, yesterday, and I was like, they're the perfect foil for each other because they both have the opposite amounts of the same qualities. So like, I get why the partnership really works, but like, you wouldn't know that you have this goofy kind of part of you because you're so professional presenting. Anyways.
Yeah. I love like the depth of your personality. Yeah.
And anyways, we've become really good friends. I was able to go to Mexico to celebrate mm-hmm. your wedding this last fall. And that was such an amazing experience.
She also did a great job with the flowers. Impromptu flowers, honestly.
No, and just from the photographs, I was blown away. So for both of you.
Like, yeah. It was definitely one of my favorite parties that I've been to. Okay. Let's dive in a little bit more into why you're here today. So we invited you on to do a Click Love Buy episode, but we just want to start out by getting to know you a little bit better. Tell us about you as a kid. What were you like?
Start from zero.
Yeah.
So I grew up in Tijuana in Mexico. That's where I went to school. That's where all my family is. This little border town. Everyone knows for the wrong reason.
Yes. Yeah.
That's my hometown.
I'm of Mexican descent too. So I love having a sister in the room. It just makes me happy.
Yeah. And you will know a big portion of Mexicans have a lot of family. Yes. And so that's how I grew up with not only my parents and my siblings, but all my cousins and my aunts and uncles and my cousins. It's like a party that goes on all day, but people just arrives at the table and then they sit there and they stay there all day. Some people come, some people go, but it's this informality about it that you just go about your day knowing that there's people there that are always there to welcome you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
My family still lives in Tijuana. So okay. I was the only one that came to the state. So when I came to the States full time without going back and forth to Mexico, it was when I moved to college. And that was in 2009.
Got it. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's really interesting. So you were having this very binational experience for your entire childhood.
Yeah, it was like so interesting. Things like TV, mm-hmm. right? And yes. the border, just because it's so far away from the center of Mexico where all the boom mm-hmm. is happening, we actually got more U.S. channels. So sure. growing up, I would watch TV in English because those were the channels, unless you were paying like pay-per-view. So once I graduated from high school, I decided I wanted to come to the States. My high school diploma I couldn't get into university without like with a Mexican high school. So I used that as like an exploration of what I wanted to do.
Did you have inclinations of being pulled into design, and did any of your family work in the space?
I was always intrigued by my dad's tools. So he actually was on the path to becoming an architect in Mexico. Wow. And then I came in, plans change. But he was a trained drafter. Okay. So he had all the tools.
Blood.
He had the desk and the rulers and all the type of pencils. Mm-hmm. And so I love going into his stuff, and he would be like, this is expensive stuff.
I would love to see those pictures, those photographs of that. Because I think now architecture is very digitized. So when mm-hmm. you think about like pre-CAD, pre-digital age, an architect has a presence, right? Their drafting table tools, like you were saying, has to have a whole studio or at least a whole corner in a room. Yeah, like you can't right. hide that or put that
and
away.
My dad actually didn't have them at home. He had an office that he would go and be a draft person there, okay. but he definitely had some tools that he would just bring home. And so I was always curious, what is this? Mm-hmm. Ooh, colors.
It's in your blood.
I didn't know what architecture was, honestly. It was just like, this seems fun.
Cool. So then you were letting things percolate, trying to get excited about different areas of interest.
I already knew I was going to try architecture first.
Okay.
Because in high school, we had these counselors where they like, let's help you out.
Did they do a test for you?
They did a test for me. And it was a letter combination that you look in a book and it tells you like the career that like you're like super inclined to do.
Do you have any idea what that was called by chance?
I don't get into these tests.
We got to go back. We got to go back and dig into this.
Well, the kicker is that my combination of letters did not exist.
Oh, okay.
Like, good for you. You broke the code.
You're off the charts.
You never have to work a day in your life. Congratulations.
Really high on the science side, but also on the
creative.
Artistic.
Yes.
And I was just like, okay, cool. But tell me, what career should I focus on? And this was just like a whim response from the, now I understand that it was just like a whim. Maybe you'll be good with graphic design, maybe industrial design, mm-hmm. maybe architecture.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I have no idea what industrial design is. Mm-hmm. Graphic design at that time for me was extremely artistic to the point where I was like, I'm not going to make any money out of this. Yeah. So then the leftover was architecture.
It's those little markers that we don't really know how they line up until we're on the path. And it's, all of this now makes sense. The things that we didn't think anything of in the moment, now it starts to align in a little bit more thoughtful way.
Mm-hmm. And so you decided you're going to do your studies in the U.S. You're working on your first foundational classes. Mm-hmm. What was the moment where you decided to go to architecture school? What was that?
When community college, because I knew architecture was the path. I was like, I might as well take architecture classes and see if I actually like it.
Yeah.
And so that's what I did. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, I'm going to keep going.
So you're at community college and then you're like, okay, I need to go to an actual school where architecture is the focus. And so you chose
Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo.
Yes, which is where I grew up, like the Central Coast. So like we have that in common as well, right? Yeah. It's this crazy little thing.
I wanted to bring something up when I said that just because it's transactional love.
Yeah.
It was like, that was like the first big decision that I decided on transact on. It was going to college and be like, I'm on my own. I'm taking this loan.
Yeah.
Like, oh gosh,
that was the biggest transaction.
Putting yourself through it. That's incredible. Yeah. A woman that is very steadfast and new to this country, steadfast in your vision and your art, and you're going to put yourself through something that is a risk, right?
Honestly, I was also extremely strategic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even when I was in Tijuana thinking, I want to do architecture, I knew I didn't want to do it in that city. And there were a couple options for architecture school that would have been a lot cheaper. So my original instinct was to apply to schools in other parts of Mexico, like private schools. I wanted to go to Guadalajara or Tec Monterrey, or Mexico City. turns out that you have to pay up front.
Mm. Oh, wow.
So
I didn't know that.
All these private schools, you have to come up with the cash, like on the spot. And so I was like, okay, that's not an option. And I was lucky enough that I am a U.S. citizen. And so I had this fourth option, which it was the longer route because I had to do community college. But I was like, okay, this is what I'm doing because it's just strategic.
There's a path.
Yeah. And then once I was there, again, another strategic step was I can't go out of state because that's going to be an incredible debt out of the question. You see schools where I took them out because I knew they were usually more expensive than state universities. And I want a school that is recognized for their architecture program. Right. And so the only option was Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo. All the classes that I was taking, it was just so that I would fulfill every single requirement Cal Poly needed.
Wow.
And that was it. Now, the studios there were different. Once I got to Cal Poly, the studios are open 24/7. So you go to a class. It's usually a five-hour class. You have a five-hour class every single day, plus your other classes that take an hour here and there. And then you return at night.
Yes.
Or after hours. And you live there.
Yeah. It's so funny. Because so I'm not an architect in any way. But when I was at Cal Poly, I didn't go there. But my fiance at the time did. That's a whole other Oprah. But two of his best friends were in the architecture program. And the studios at Cal Poly get a little wild. Mm-hmm. Even though these are all like very straight-laced.
Oh, Wendy, not humans. Just at Cal Poly.
Studios. It's very limited. So my experience is to just hear. Yeah. But I was just like, as you're starting to talk about how they're open 24/7, I was like, oh, there were definitely long nights that even I, someone who didn't even go to school, spent time in those studios.
I just want to echo what Andrea said, because for me, going straight into college, straight into studios, and it was odd for me to look at my friends that were going home at 3, 4, whatever. And they're like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm in studio. Like, you move in, you get assigned a huge desk, and then there's refrigerators, couches where you can sleep. You
Our
move
studios.
In. I actually met my husband while I was in architecture school. He was like, what are you doing? And it's 11, 12. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm in studio. He's like, is that a club? I'll meet you. Like, and I'm like, no, I'm on campus at studio. And he really thought I was like avoiding him. Right. No, I live here. Have you never met an architecture student?
Yeah, this is so specific to like artists and like architects in general. But there's this way in which we get consumed and we do choose it.
Yeah, it is definitely a choice.
Right.
There's a lot of advocacy nowadays for eliminating that.
Like creating balance.
Yeah, creating more balance. I feel like it's never a requirement, but you almost feel like it is a requirement. Like who's showing up at midnight
for sure.
And what time did you leave?
When you and I were in school, that was definitely the case of if someone's not sleep deprived, they're not doing a good job, which now I think has changed. I think there's advocacy for
that's a really good
That's
thing.
Not healthy. Yeah, it's not healthy.
It's not. So when I was in community college, I was crossing the border back and forth from Tijuana to Mexico. So I would have to commute 1 hour to the border and then stand in the border for 2 hours to get across and then another 45 minutes to get to college. But because they were in open studios, you go home and you work on your project. So there was this one time, it was one of our final reviews, and I was sleep deprived for 2 days.
Yeah.
Just working on a project. And I was just like, I got it done. It was all completed. I'm getting into the car. My mom is actually that morning. She's, oh, I'll drive you to the border. And I was like, great. And then she, at some point, she's, oh, I wanted to do my makeup before I get to the meeting. Can you drive? And I was like, yeah, sure. I fell asleep on the wheel. We had a really bad accident. Now, everyone turned out fine. It was fine.
Yeah, I've met her.
Everything
mom.
Was fine. She's no, more
it's
than
so
fine.
True, though.
But
it's not safe.
No, but the like, funny thing in like where your psychology is at that point, the car was upside down, windows smashed.
No, you're like, I gotta get my model.
I did. I ran in there. I was like, Mom, are you okay? And she's like, yeah. And then I went in there.
You're like, how about your makeup? Is your makeup okay? How about that? Was it worth it?
No, and I was just like,
I can't miss my crit.
And I was so proud because my model did not fall to pieces. I was just like, I can still turn it in. If there wasn't any blood on your model, you didn't do a good job. Because someone eventually is going to cut themselves. You have all the X-Acto knives, all the burning
and
tools,
you're sleep deprived.
All
and
the
drunk college.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I love talking about the studio culture because it's so unique.
Yeah,
it takes a lot of foresight for you to see that end goal.
I just want to go back to what you said earlier. There's a lot of people who might be interested in what their next chapter looks mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. and how to manifest that well. And I think
true.
You have figured out a way to manifest what you want and been thoughtful about what those steps are. Because right. it's one thing to have a dream. It's another thing to execute every step to get right. there.
And I feel like sometimes you and I joke because you use the word manifest. And I'm like, I'm not manifesting anything. I just do it. But in essence, that's what it is.
Right.
It is what it is. It's understanding who you are, where you stand in society, economically, on all the things, and right. being super honest and raw about it. And then being like, okay, so what are you going to do about it?
Right.
It's serious.
Right.
And do it. And also is the question of how bad do you want it?
Right.
Because these questions that I... like every time I want to do something mm-hmm. that seems crazy or too far away or just impossible, I'm like, but how bad do you want it? Are you going to, in 5, 10 years older, are you going to be that person who's telling the young people, I didn't do this thing because I was afraid? And if you think you will be sour about it, then yeah. go and do something about it. Mm-hmm.
Was there any teacher or crit or any moment in your college career that was pivotal?
Maybe I just like want to interrupt for yeah. people who don't know the lingo that you're
Sorry.
Using. Crit means critique.
Yes. Thank you, Wendy.
Thank you, Wendy. I didn't even register.
I know. That's because you guys speak the language.
Yeah.
I don't. So I can code switch for us.
No, honestly, I was trying to survive. It yeah. was cultural shock. It was like being away from my parents. It was all the things at the same time. It was mostly survival mode. But I will say that I did not think I was going to end up doing what I'm doing now. I always thought I was going to work on bigger projects, more on a society level, something like a museum or something that you can go back and visit and be like, oh, I worked on this. And that didn't end up being the case. I tried it. So after college, you usually just go out and see who hires you. You're mm-hmm. like, I have zero skills. Take me. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. So
is there like an apprenticeship sort of role? What is the next step there? Is it really just here's my resume, or do you need to know somebody? Or
I think in any job yeah. recommendations, it's God. A lot of companies, usually the bigger ones, are going to have some internships during the summer before you graduate right. or a year before. And so those
so you
are
can
great.
Start to build relationships with them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because I was new to all of this, I didn't realize how important knowing people in the industry was.
Mm. That gives mm-hmm. me great insight for how I met you and your involvement in all of these other organizations.
I also feel like you don't know what you don't know. So you have yeah. to throw yourself yes. at something and then be like, oh, this is not it. Or, oh, this opened a new avenue, or it'll give you a new idea. You just have to keep throwing things at the wall.
Yes. So how did you get your first yeah. job?
I applied to all the jobs in Southern California because I wanted to be close to my family. And that was the whole plan the whole time. I hadn't thought about it in any other terms. And then I was like, okay, San Diego is not hiring. But what about LA? They were hiring, but they wanted to pay me like...
peanuts.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like, we're doing you a favor.
Yeah.
And then after an interview, I sat in traffic for 3 hours. So I was like, wait, you want to pay me $12 an hour that I can go make without a college degree?
Right.
I was like, okay, no, I'm going to pass on that. And then a friend in the Bay Area, he knew he wanted to come to the Bay Area. So mm-hmm. he applied to multiple jobs here. He had gotten his dream job, but other companies were calling him. And so he recommended me. It was exciting. I never considered coming to San Francisco. It seemed like the right fit. And once I started, I'm like, oh, this is cool. I did move up to the Bay Area with Chris because graduation day in Cal Poly was the grand opening of the winery he had been working on.
Oh, oh my wow. gosh, perfect timing.
We went to the grand opening.
I love this.
My parents were there. Chris's parents were there. Because like we were both
you
celebrating.
Faith, manifest, whatever.
I was literally yeah. thinking that exact same thing. I was like,
you do.
I don't know how this could work out any better, but yes.
Yeah, so his parents came to my graduation. My parents were there, obviously. And then he was like, okay, let's go to the grand opening of the winery that I just worked these like last years. And they had wine flowing. Part of the winery was a stage, so it was band playing. He introduced me with the architect he had been working with. Aww. It was just like, it was great. My parents still remember it. They had a blast. And my dad like doesn't even speak English. He just had a blast.
Yeah. So what was the winery?
Priscil.
Pr- Chris Skill.
We should go. It's good.
Also, I learned that Chris is like, are you going out with Wendy? When I heard that I already have a red
He doesn't
mark.
Even say Wendy.
Yeah. Oh, that girl.
He has a nickname for you.
Oh, what's my nickname?
Wendell.
What does that mean?
Wendell.
It's just Wendy.
It's just Wendy extended.
Just silly.
So the
Wendell.
Thing about,
are you going out with Wendell?
Okay. See you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow. Yeah. I know. See you never. Yeah. Get home safe eventually.
Where's my husband?
Are you going out with Wendy? Get me a cheesy gordita crunch.
Put in your menu request now. I love it.
Guys, the amount that Taco Bell comes up in our podcast series,
we really need to reach out. We need to reach out. It's insane. Yeah.
Sorry, going back to Andrea.
Yeah. We're gonna circle back and get back to the topic of conversation today, which is not how late I keep both of you out, but
this is way too much fun, by the way. Sorry, going back to Andrea.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
So residential architecture, which is what I do. That's the job that I took when I came to San Francisco. And then I moved to another company 2 years later in San Helena. And again, I did residential. All of these are luxury homes. They want a full service and they trust their designer. So that's why they're hiring us, right? Because they trust that we can do it better.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, the way that I operate consulting for architecture offices, basically in anything they need, I just jump in on the project. Do they need me to oversee a project? I do it. Do they need me to develop all the interior detailing, everything? I do that. Whatever they need. That's where I jump in.
I think, interesting.
That's what architecture does, right? It creates this opportunity for experience. Yeah. It's the scaffolding. It's the container in which we experience, right?
It's your baby and you let it go in and it just becomes what the people want. I went to Mexico City with my cousin who is the chef and I made a tour to go to one of Barragán's houses and oh my God, this is amazing. This is art. The landscape is art. Any angle that you want to see it is just...
Yes. Yeah.
But from pictures, you can't see that. No. You cannot experience each tiny... Even the way that they styled it, I think like they based it because they're tourists. These homes are styled in the way that they would have. Because back in the day, the architects had more input on how everything needed to be styled. You look at any single window, nook, and even if you see, I don't know, imperfection, let's say, mm-hmm. Oh, it's old and there's a crack in the stucco.
It's
but then there's this toy that represents this Mexican heritage of back in the day and it tells you a story. It's just beautiful.
The beauty. Is that your favorite project?
In person? Yes.
Yes, Barragán's house in Mexico City.
I think that's like the point of architecture in general. When you try and understand a thing through pictures or in a book,
it's not
the same because the whole point is to be there to experience it, to live the moment, to be in that place.
Yeah. And I did study abroad. I went to Italy and Switzerland. I stayed mostly in Switzerland. So I did see really great European architecture that... Mm-hmm. We were just a mess, like the stereotypical, and you're just like touching a wall for like minutes.
Like concrete should not be this soft, but it's velvety. But it's velvety.
Yeah. Going to a foreign country and seeing something radically different. I think everyone has a different discovery moment. I remember when I was in Australia, I was there for almost a year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I didn't actually do that much traveling, but there's an architect, they focus on nature and then the natural environment of Australia. And they did everything by way of let's inform this building from nature and let nature fuel this building. I realized that little things like the houses in the countryside, the pitch of their homes is slightly different. How much rain do you get? If you get too much rain at a certain time, like at a certain speed, it's going to ruin your soil.
Right.
If you get snow, it just produces all these different reactions to your environment that you want to be as respectful to the environment. And for me, I feel like every place that I see, oh, I see why you did that. Mm. I see why you did that other thing. And in Japan, it was very enlightening going from city to city. They're so different.
Yeah. So different, yeah.
But they all respect their environment in different ways.
Yeah.
What was very enlightening in Japan is that you can have both.
Yeah.
You can make some of the functionality, but also the modern and also the old. Mm-hmm. And they just lash together. You know very sharply what is new, but it blends so smoothly with the old.
I like the word sharply. It's like a dichotomy of old and new, but it's not offensive.
Yeah.
Right. It's actually a beautiful, crazy, tattered rubble. And now this rubble is more beautiful because of this fine, like velvet, modern concrete.
So I have a wormhole that I'm going on. So transactional love was one of my wormholes. This is the new one. Mm-hmm. Are you ready for it? It's actually very applicable to both of you. So we have this saying, when time stops, where we want to stop time. And it's the where does time stop? And this idea is noodling around in my head about the location of time and how specific spaces can be time capsules in a way. So I'm noodling it in a couple of different ways. There's these places that ask you to stop time and be present. And I'm curious about how architecture or your experience with architecture and design in this way informs this idea, because it's just something that came to me literally while I was in the bath, and like the steam was like floating in the sky, and I'm like, there's literally nowhere else that this moment happens except for here, and this is where time stops, is me in my bathtub right now.
I feel like not only related to architecture, but everyone probably has those moments for different reasons.
I think about place as such a grounder, because we talk sometimes about scent. People, like if you smell a perfume from like your childhood.
I mean, and as a florist, that's what I do all the time.
For me, and this is just my own brain, when I walk into a place that had meaning, had emotion, it's so much stronger than scent, right? Going the into like my childhood home, now that we don't own it, what would it be like to walk into that and think all these things probably hit you with memory? I think place is such a grounder, and I think that's why I chose architecture to study and explore. Place to me is so fascinating. You can be in ideas and art and feelings, but then as soon as you put a place to it, that becomes real.
You ground it.
There's bricks and mortar, there's people, there's sounds, there's aroma, there's everything, right?
Yeah. So circling back to what your favorite work or project, now that you've been practicing all the things that you've learned, what lights you up? What is the project that you feel like is the most resonant?
A lot of the projects that I've done, I started in San Francisco and then Napa Valley. That was a lot of integration of the outdoors inside. So a lot of the projects that I'm used to doing and that I really enjoy, it's not just we design a room because you need a room, is why do you need the room? I get into those questions. Do you actually need the room? Or can we like repurpose something else rather than doing an addition? Or can we reintegrate it into some other?
It's like a lot of psychological work you're doing.
Yeah. And but those are the conversations that light me up, because I get to know the client. I get to know their real deep needs.
Right.
And sometimes it's not really spatial. Sometimes you introduce something new. Like, what if we just move this wall? And they're like, I never thought about that. But that fulfills the purpose.
It's like they have their answer. But if the seeking of the answer to the problem is X, is there another way we can achieve that goal?
Exactly. So those are my favorite projects. And so the latest one that I've been doing is a personal client that I have in Napa. The contractor actually reached out to me. And he realized he's a design and contractor. So he normally does his own design. With this client in particular, he realized that the client was a lot more artistically oriented. And so he reached out to me. So I jumped in and worked with him. And so the greatest moments is when I present a perspective. And then he's, this is nothing of what I thought I wanted. But I see it. And now I want it. Like, it's perfect.
Right.
Like, this corner that you created over here. Like, it's just taking the boxes in the most unconventional ways, or not the ways that they perceive that it should be done, and still taking the box. That's my joy.
What you're doing is you're transmuting what your client is saying into and through the art that you offer.
Yeah.
And feeding it back to them. So you're offering some sort of mirror to them, which is therapy in a way. And I will say, like, on a personal note, I've been watching this project develop, and every time I see it and hear little snippets about it, I'm like, more in love with that human who's asking you to design. Like, just, oh yeah, I really can't wait to meet this person.
Well, and that's why I'm really excited, because it's an unexpected client in particular. I'm used to doing more of the neutral palette, very harmonious, clean lines. And that is beautiful and gorgeous, and it has its complexities on its own. But this client was like, yeah, I want that, but I also love my 70s home.
Yeah. Mm.
It has these bones, but also this charm to it that I would like to enhance.
Yeah.
Yeah. And respect, right? Like, you want to bring it forward.
But also color.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, oh my gosh. So I feel like the more I've been in this industry, and there's certain standards, there's definitely styles. Like, the first architects, when I first came out of college, a lot of the projects were very traditional San Franciscan homes, so Victorian and things. And so you got the moldings and the detailing. And so I learned a lot about that. There's a lot of history into that. And then when I started working in San Helena, it was a lot more clean lines, modern, but also very rooted in the location, because vineyards, mountains, those have been like my professional experiences working with other architects. And once I got this new client, there was my personal client, and he wanted to do something totally different. I was like, I'm so into this.
Right.
And so I think it is an evolution of self and what you think you want to do. But I think at this point, I'm realizing that at the core, I just really enjoy delivering what the client wants in the most unexpected way.
Mm. So speaking of clients, do you have a target audience? Do you have a profile?
An ideal client, if you will.
I think someone that just wants a room because they need a room, or like an updated bathroom, that can be lovely, and I've done it. Mm-hmm. But I get more joy, and I think I get more into the projects when it's a holistic approach. So that's when I get into conversing with a client, and what do you actually want to achieve? How do you see your future self? Are you going to age in this house? Right. If they've lived long enough in their house and they know how the sun path is and they love a certain corner, what do you envision doing in that corner? I want to know all these things so that I can be the filter and the putting the puzzles together so that it makes sense in their brain the way that they want it to live in.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that question. What's your future self? Like, it's such a great question.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think ideally, it's definitely someone who's connected to nature. I love being able to integrate the outside and the inside. Mm-hmm. I know it's very cliche saying, oh, bring the in to the outside, especially in California. We are so lucky that we can do that. But it's more about thinking about the outside as a space that you can extend your life or your living activities into seamlessly with the inside. Mm-hmm. So whether it is a window at the end of a hall that you get to see the outside and a tree that you're growing, and you're not really thinking of going outside, but that.
Right.
And then you turn left and like the other part of your home. And so it's integrated. It could be as easy as, we'll put a shower outside so that there's no mess inside your house. Let's make it functional. And it's an outdoor activity. It's like an occasional activity, but it matters to you. Let's take care of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what's interesting and resonant about the work that you do is that you aren't just creating spaces for people to live in, but you're letting people grow through them, right? You're offering them the opportunity to just fully be present, whether that's like inside or outside their home. I love hearing the idea of creating that sort of gray zone between the indoor and the outdoor, because I think that in California, that's how we primarily live. We're so lucky that our weather is insane year round. So like, it can be January and it's still 75 degrees outside, and it's like, great, let's make sure that we have dinner outside tonight, right? Like, we have these opportunities to take, and not every climate or market really has those opportunities.
And I've encountered all kinds of clients. There are the clients that are every afternoon, this is our family activity. Mm-hmm. We have 3 children. My husband and I work. When we come home, we have dinner outside.
Yeah.
So then how do you make it so that it is the optimal condition most of the times year round so they can have dinner outside because that is what they value. And then I have the other clients that are like bugs, no open shelves. I don't want that. I don't want to have to be dusting that.
Right.
And so we go into the details of behavior. Like how do you take care of your kitchen? How does your family live in this living room where in your kitchen you can still see them? Do you like that? Do you not like that? Do kids complain? Do you care? Are they going to move out? All those things, bigger questions that are just a part of the future.
Right.
Inform how you live.
It's absolutely that scaffolding and that framework in which we were talking earlier about how we actually live. And that's the art of architecture, is really creating spaces that allow you to fully express and be without frictions that maybe society or a previous owner of a home had, right? There's a way in which what you all do personalizes to allow for that continued personal expression of your client.
Yeah. And I also want to say the type of work that I do, it involves a lot of the exterior, but also the interior. So all the fixed cabinets, tile selection, shelving, all of that I design with the client.
Lighting.
So that we know exactly where all of your utensils are going to go. Sometimes I do get into, this is my knives drawer and this is my spoons drawer. And some people care, some people don't, but that's the level that I get in with them so that it makes a functional, just hassle-free. Let's actually get into the way that you want to live, the interactions that you want to have, because sometimes you want quiet rooms. Sometimes you're like, no, I want to be into everything. And that's when you do the open concept. But also understanding that the open concept can get tiring. So that's when our knowledge as architects or designers gets to, I'm going to provide you this room and you don't know that you're going to need it.
Right.
But you're going to be happy.
I'm an expert.
Yeah, like you're going to be happy. You will like this.
Yeah, and you're translating behavior to an environment, which again, vision, you said this about your earlier stage in your life. Like you had this visioning and then you work backwards and you have all these steps. And I think you envision people's visions of their lives. And then you work backwards from that and like get into the nitty gritty of the detailing of, you know, the knife drawer.
Yeah.
That's something that they're probably not thinking about, but you are. It's emotional, but I'm translating this.
Yeah. And honestly, a lot of the residential design that anyone does, like whether a designer or an architect, it is emotional.
Yeah.
At that point, nothing makes sense. It doesn't make sense.
Oh, yeah. I was just thinking, I was like, I feel like we should have a questionnaire for what kind of person are you? And like, we just like fill it out so we get an idea about who your client is. And then
I've been working on that. No, I have a series of questions that I'm like,
what
like,
Taco Bell order are you? Design a house.
Yeah, exactly.
I do need to find a common denominator to ask questions about.
I love it. I love it. I think so. If there were a way that people could support you in your endeavors moving forward, what are the ways that we can transact with you?
I don't think we really got into it, but the road to architecture is a long one. And you actually have to take several tests nationwide, and then in California specifically, California has its own standards, and they're all for good reason. They're there for your safety, well-being, and everything. So you want a licensed architect if they're going to be doing a big caliber of design to your home. There are certain limits, which is within the limit where I operate. Single family home, probably single story, wood construction. Where I operate the most, you want to do something more intensive, a home bigger than that, more complicated, then you want a licensed architect. That's what you want to search for.
And I'll just say you're very close to that.
I am very close to that.
Almost. Like, so when this comes out, your last test, right? You've been working towards this for many years.
Yeah. So you have to take 6 tests nationwide. The passing rate is very low on all of them. And you just have to keep on it and learning more and making sure that you understand the topics. Some portions are about design, intent, using climate, using sustainable methods, but a big portion is about security and life safety.
Yeah.
Extremely important. And in California, we have extra requirements that are not required in other states. In California, we have fires. In California, we have environmental protections. We have earthquakes, coastal zones, mm-hmm. and environmental stuff like save the birds, save the fish. So I'm at the last stage. I need to take the California exam. And then I'll be a licensed architect and I can do all the things. That's coming up soon.
That's exciting. And then online we can find you, your studio.
You can find me in Andrea Escobar Studio and on Instagram. And
I love seeing your sketches. I got to say, seeing the behind the scenes work.
Yeah. I share a lot of work of my personal work when I'm helping smaller projects. I'm really excited about Laundry Room that just... is finishing up.
Oh, I can't wait for this laundry room.
It's so colorful. Oh. And I saw
the
tile.
Wait, did you post the tiles of it?
Yeah.
Okay, I saw that. And I'm just like, I love this combination.
But it's so close to being ready. And I'm talking to a photographer. And it's like, I think it's the smallest.
Tanya? Are you talking to Tanya?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. It's the smallest room I've ever helped design.
With the detail, right?
Yeah, and I just love that the client was like, unconventionally, she did not want... necessarily a clean room. A lot of people want a clean laundry. And I think it's because you think of it as being a messy room. And so you just want peace when you're working in there. This client was like, no, I want this room to motivate me to do the task that I want to do in the room. And I'm like, yes.
I love that.
Thank you. Yes, let's do it. I'm so motivated. And so anyways, it's coming up soon.
That's exciting. Okay, I will say, as a follower of your studio, I just love the snippets that you share, and they're zoomed in, so you don't know the full picture, but I love the sketches. I think that's becoming a lost art of architects, designers being able to draw, just because it's becoming digital.
I was going to post on that last sketch that I put. I was like, oh, I miss actual sketch paper, and I have it. But the tablet is just so convenient. I love using sketch paper and layers and markers.
Because I think people are skipping the drawing on anything and they're just going straight to modeling or drafting, right?
Sometimes it's true.
I do appreciate an architect that shares that raw moment before they put it into the computer. Yeah.
And actually that sketch, I did it after a meeting with the client. And I was just so inspired. So I came home and I'm sketching. And then I posted it and she likes it. I'm like, I'm sorry, I didn't show you a preview. I don't even know if this is going to be it, but it's just a quick snippet.
Right. I didn't even think about that. That's funny. They're like,
But that's cool too, because then it starts to create buzz around your design.
The process.
Yeah, exactly. The process.
The messy process.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things we talk about in the podcast, and we touched on it a little bit here, was this conversation that you have, your client is having, and then the art itself. And we're constantly riffing on this idea. And I think that what architecture and what you do specifically is hear what your client is looking for and then speak that in architecture or design. And so the art that you offer is, it's its own language in a way. You're translating for other people what they want.
Yeah. I actually do that a lot.
Yeah.
Norma, you'd be amazed how many people think that you walk into their house and you're going to tell how to fix it. And I'm like, no, this is not how it works. It truly is about you.
Right.
Understand what your needs are and what your sensitivities are of everything. Color, privacy, all the things. And then we find a solution. I'm never going to walk into a room thinking, oh my gosh, this is like hideous.
This is totally wrong.
Yeah, because what if this person just absolutely loves it?
Yeah.
Like she enjoys that moment every single time. Every moment she comes out, I feel at peace here. I can't judge that.
Yeah. And
that's what I try to help my clients find within their homes.
And you ask the right questions to get that out of them. Being able to ask the right questions to get that out of people is the art.
Yeah, and it's similar to flowers, right? When people come to, you're not asking, what colors do you like? And you just select the colors
that match their description. You're asking them the occasion. What is the sentiment? What do you want to convey? And so in that respect, it's like very similar that you cannot just give an answer without knowing any of the background.
Right. You need context.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
I love that.
That was good to end on.
So I'm going to transact with Andrea. Andrea Escobar Studio.
Studio.
On Instagram. Mm-hmm. And
that's the .com too. Yeah.
That is also the .com.
It's so fun. Cheers. Oh. Way too much fun.
This is Wendy and Norma. We love hearing from you. Your comments, your likes, your stars, all of the things really resonate with us. Find us on Patreon for more exclusive episodes, early access, and community content. This is Wendy and Norma inviting you to transact with love.